It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening, Los Angeles. I'm Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn. And here I am on Thursday night, a new night for Gervie's Law. This is the first show in primetime on Thursday night. Yes, I know a lot of you have been listening for the last 8 years when we were on the weekends with Kerry Kasem. Now I'm flying solo right here at KBC and on KBC.com around the world. Hello, Los Angeles. You're going to love Gervie's Law if you haven't heard it yet. We have the greatest interviews in the world right here on KBC. And today is a special show because we have one of those great peel the onion interviews, I like to call them. Because we are going to tell you about an amazing man who had an amazing hockey career and is doing amazing things with his mental health advocacy. And we're fortunate to have him with us. And before I get to the diminutive Theo Fleury and introduce him properly, I do want to introduce to you someone who I know very well and who I am excited to have with us on this show because he also knows Theo Fleury very well. The one and only Tom Thompson, Tommy Thompson, former head scout for the Minnesota Wild from 1992 to 2002. And for you Angelinos who don't know who the Minnesota Wild are, it's a hockey team, the NHL. Yes, it lives here, LA Kings and Anaheim Ducks. Tommy was the assistant general manager for the Minnesota Wild from 2002 to 2010. He was also a scout for the Calgary Flames. That's where it gets interesting with Theo Fleury. He was a former scout with the New York Rangers. He won a Stanley Cup as a scout with the Calgary Flames in 1989. Not coincidentally, Theo Fleury won it the same year in his rookie campaign. He's a writer for Inside Column for THN.com, the hockey news within Sports Illustrated. And because this is a legal show and I am a lawyer, I must say that I'm happy to report that Tommy Thompson is also a lawyer by trade. That's where I got to know him back in the day. In Winnipeg, Canada, he was my baseball coach in junior baseball in the South End Chiefs. When I was 18 years old playing in Manitoba, he was the best coach I ever had. He's written so many interesting articles. You gotta read his stuff. One of them, Becoming an NHL Scout, is the definitive article on scouting. Tommy, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Thanks very much, Alan. By the way, let's correct one thing. I didn't win the Stanley Cup in 1989. Theo Fleury and about 22 other players won the Stanley Cup, and we got rings because of it.
No. I corrected that. You know what? You're a winner. You sent me an email, Tommy, and you said that you were the Stanley Cup. You weren't on the team, but I know you were there with the Calgary Flames. So you're a winner. You win the Stanley Cup. I don't care what you say, even though Theo was on the ice, and we're going to talk about his incredible year in 1989, because I know you've told me some stories about it, but let's talk a little bit about Theo Fleury, because for those of you who don't know, and for those of you who are just not hockey fans, you need to hear Theo's story, because this is a story of overcoming obstacles and dealing with demons and becoming a successful human being, not let alone hockey player. So Theo had a stellar year career in the NHL. He played from 1989 through 2003, 15 years, played for the Flames, the Blackhawks, the Avalanche, and the Rangers. Importantly, he won gold medals at the Olympics for Canada and which he represented Canada two times in the Olympics, won a gold medal at the World Championships and the World Juniors. And of course, as Tommy just mentioned, he won the Stanley Cup, and you can't take that away from him. I don't care what Tommy says. He was with the Flames. Theo won the Stanley Cup in 89. He played in seven NHL All-Star games. In fact, he was the runner-up for Rookie of the Year in his first campaign to Brian Leetch. He is one of the smallest players of his generation. They say about 5'6". And I will tell you something. Back in the early 90s, when I was a reporter in the LA Kings locker room, I remember distinctly, I don't remember a whole lot of what I was doing there interviewing players. All I remember is Theo Fleury's legs. They were huge tree stumps. Unbelievable. I remember being in the dressing room and seeing him in shorts, and his legs were huge. 5'6", maybe 5'5". Not a lot of players of that stature. You know, he scored an overtime goal in against the Edmonton Oilers in 1991, often thought of the fourth greatest goal celebration in history. And if you haven't seen it, check it out on YouTube. He played in over 1,000 NHL games, scored over 1,000 points, and ranks in the top 40 all-time in points per game played. He had 90 plus points four times, 100 plus points two times. Now let's talk about his life. He battled drug and alcohol addiction during his career. He grew up in poverty in Russell, Manitoba. And in his book, Playing with Fire, a best-selling autobiography in 2009, he revealed that he was sexually abused by his former coach. He has been an advocate for mental health and sexual abuse victims for several years now, a well-known public speaker. And I have to tell you, you need to do yourselves a favor. Everyone listening needs to go home, because you're probably in your cars. But if you're home, check out the TEDx talk called How Curiosity Can Cure You. It's from Vancouver in 2018. And Theo does an amazing job of motivating so many people. It is a pleasure to have a country music singer and songwriter with us today. Theo Fleury, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Wow, that was the longest introduction I think I've ever had, but I really appreciate the opportunity, and always love talking about trauma, mental health, and addiction.
Theo, I got to tell you, I've been doing this for 8 years. Every single guest tells me that they listen to the podcast after the radio show, which is live right now. They record my introduction of them, and they listen to it every morning when they get up in the morning. So I expect the same from you.
Okay, well, I've never colored inside the lines ever in the history of my life, so
okay.
This should be interesting.
Okay, it is going to be interesting, and I'm going to start you off with the easiest question that I can ever think of, Theo, and then I'm going to get Tom's perspective. I want to know, after everything that I just said, what are you most proud of?
My sobriety. Without my sobriety, I have nothing. So it's been... So today is 5,674 consecutive days of sobriety.
Wow. Congrats. Congrats.
Thank you. Like I said, without that, I don't have anything.
You know, it's incredible. And Tommy, and you can say hi to Theo. They know each other very well. Tommy, tell me what you think you're most proud of, knowing Theo for as long as you have, and he talks about his sobriety. Do you have a different perspective?
No, not at all. And by the way, do you mind if I call you Theron, as I've always called you Theron?
Yes. Everybody from Manitoba calls me Theron, so absolutely.
Yeah, well, I go back to my conversations with your mother many years ago, and as I recall it, she was a voracious reader at the time. And for you and your two brothers, she picked out your names from different novels she was reading.
Yes.
Correct?
My name.
Okay,
yes,
yeah,
my,
right.
Okay. My name comes from the Disney book, Old Yeller.
Really? Okay.
You didn't know that it was from Old Yeller?
I probably did it one time. She told me, his mother, Donna, told me all the books there, but I couldn't remember which ones, but I knew they were from three different books.
Theo, tell us about, but, you know, we're talking about Donna. I just want to know, Tommy, just a sec. I want to find out because it's really interesting. Theo's talked about, or Theron, if you're from Manitoba, talked about his parents. Tell us a little bit about that because there's your first obstacle. The environment you grew up with and how you overcome it and how they overcame their demons.
Yeah. Well, you know, having been in therapy now for, you know, many, many years, you know, I realized that, you know, both my parents had some childhood trauma in their story. And, you know, that manifested itself into addictions as a coping mechanism because of the, you know, emotional pain and suffering that was left behind from those experiences. And so I grew up in chaos and, you know, a little bit of violence and, you know, we were very poor. We didn't have a whole lot. You know, I shared a 100-square-foot bedroom with my two brothers. And yeah, so that was my sort of my first experience with trauma. But, you know, around the same time, and, you know, one of my earliest memories that I have is, you know, I wandered down to, you know, the local rink in Binscarth, Manitoba, which was an old barn that they converted into an ice rink. And, you know, I put on the equipment for the very first time and I stepped on the ice and I didn't fall down and I didn't struggle. And I absolutely fell head over heels in love with the game of hockey. And you know, the more time I spent at the rink, the less time I had to spend at home with, you know, with dealing with my parents. And not only that, you know, we settled in a really great community. And when I got to this little community, it just so happened that the 13 best athletes in this little town of Russell, Manitoba, were all my age. And we had three incredible fathers who became our coaches and our mentors. And, you know, I spent 9 years basically with the same 13 guys and the same three coaches. And, you know, they instilled some really incredible morals in me that, you know, that I still hold very near and dear to my heart today. And but the biggest thing is we had a lot of success. And because of that, you know, it really kind of set me up for all the success I had as a professional athlete because, you know, it didn't matter what situation I went into. I was always able to figure out my role very quickly and play it to its max. And
yeah.
So,
you know, it's so interesting and we got to take a break. But after the break, I'm going to get the perspective from Tommy because, Tommy, you went to visit Theron back then when you were scouting. And I want to tell... I want you to tell us what it was like, what you saw. And, you know, a lot of people are listening here in L.A. They may not know a lot about the Métis background and the heritage. And that's something that I know that has been part of Theron's life. And perhaps we can get that perspective because this is a really great story. Now, you have this book, Playing with Fire, and everyone should get it. It's his autobiography. In 2009, it was written. But we're going through it right now, and we're going to build right to the crescendo by the end of the show. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie.
Yeah, I think I could just listen to that song all night, but... You know, I think the guys on the line that I'm talking to, they've heard it enough. Some of you in L.A. may have been hearing it for the first time and around the world, but that's Stompin' Tom Connors. And I know that Theron Fleury is a country singer and also a lover of country music. So do you have an album coming out, Theron?
It's been out for a few years already. So
well, I was talking about the second one. I know that one. That one I got.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the Succession.
Yes, well, it's been very difficult to get in the studio with all the lockdowns and all this other stuff. So,
well, you're not really into the lockdowns, are you?
No, not at all. I'm done.
You're done. You got to check out Theron's tweeting. He tweets at TheoFleury14, at TheoFleury14, or you can check out his website, TheoFleury.life. But you'll learn a little bit about what he's saying when he says he's done, because you can see that on his tweets. You know, Tommy Thompson, who's probably the greatest scout who's ever lived, that's just Alan Gervey saying, because he was my coach when I played for the South End Chiefs. But Tommy, take us back to the moment that you set eyes on Theron when you visited him in Russell, Manitoba, and you were trying to do a little scouting on this guy who, you know, had a kind of a tough upbringing.
Yeah, well, by the way, Alan, I was trying to just get the answer to your previous question. What am I proudest of with Theron? I think it's no doubt, and I want to go into this whole thing, is the effect you're trying to have, Theron, a positive effect on the lives of others. You've got your own life in order, which is tremendous, but you're having a very positive effect and have had for quite some time on the lives of other people. And that's what? The proudest thing for me. At the risk of embarrassing Theron here, but Theron's a pretty open guy about this. The background, this is when I was the manager of the junior club, and we had acquired his Western Hockey League rights. They had a player draft in 1982, and for the only time in my hockey career, we drafted a guy that no one in the organization had seen play because he'd had a serious arm injury the previous, was it January or February, Theron, that you had that injury in Portage?
Yeah. Prairie? Yeah. I think it was like April or something. Yeah.
Oh, could be. But we, and the Western Hockey League, Theron was born in 1968. They were only drafting people from 67, and then they changed the rules at the end, and by the time they changed the rules, he's injured. So we'd never seen him play. He went to the Andy Murray Hockey School in Brandon in the summer, and you weren't even allowed to have contact there, as I recall. I wasn't there, but I talked to Andy, and I talked to several people who were instructors, and they said, this guy can really play, but he's tiny. And I'd never seen him.
Hey, Tommy, did he check out his legs? They're huge.
Well, hey, he didn't have legs like that at that time.
No?
Theron knows that. I went out there with some equipment. Now, I always got along very well. His parents are wonderful people, actually, Wally and Donna. I last saw them, I think, the 90 or 1,000th game in Madison Square Garden there, Theron, when you were with the Rangers. That was at
That's
the Wild.
Right.
But this was poverty. And I'm not, but Theron's quite open about that. This was abject poverty. I the first time I came out there, like you still didn't have the go ahead to play, if you recall. And I brought some stuff out, and we went down to the rink to watch you practice with it. And here's me, and I'm thinking, wow, like this was not a bad Bantam hockey club, but this is a town of what, 2,000 or 3,000 people max. And I'm thinking, this guy looks tiny with his own team. And if you told me at that time that this guy is going to end up one of the top 40 points per game players in the history of the National Hockey League, I'd have shaken my head. But I want to get to one issue here to put it in perspective, especially for people in the USA. Racial prejudice has many faces. And as Alan knows, I've written a book on the civil rights movement in the U.S., but when we were growing up,
you got to promote that, Tommy, because I was going to say it. But go ahead, tell everyone book.
We can do that later. But I was going to say, Theron knows very well the black-white issue was not a big thing in Western Canada. Because how many black people did you ever see growing up in Russell or me in Winnipeg at an earlier?
Well,
decade?
You know, in Winnipeg, at my high school, there were three of them, and they all were on the football team. And, you know, whenever we saw a black person, we asked for their autograph because we thought they were on the Bombers.
Yeah. But the biggest form of prejudice at that time was against the people who they're called First Nations and Aboriginals now. They were called Indians then. And Métis people, as you guys know, were usually called half-breeds then. So even if you were of mixed blood like Theron, it's like former President Barack Obama. If you're in a white-dominated society and you've got other blood in you, you're looked on as the other type of person. And the two people who recommended Theron to me, they were actually people I knew from the baseball world. They'd seen him play. the one who's a very cautious guy said, this is the best hockey player I've ever seen at that age. But he's tiny and this and that. And both these guys, they're not bigoted guys. They were sort of like warning me, but you know, he's an Indian. The pride of the parents
wait a second.
Given. Oh, but this is.
I want to hear. I, and it's great to hear what Tommy's saying. But Theron's sitting there, and it reminds me of many years ago when Mike Tyson was doing the interview with Robin Givens, and she was talking about him, and he was sitting beside her. Theron's here. I need to hear from Theron. Is Tommy right? Was there that kind of prejudice? Were you called an Indian?
So I talked about this group of people that I grew up around, right? And they protected me like nobody's business. And so, long after, I've been to Russell many times and heard many, many stories from all those people, post, NHL career. And, they've all brought to the table that was happening, but I didn't see it, I didn't hear it, because I was very, very well protected by this amazing group of people in Russell, Manitoba.
Does it bother you now to hear that the scouts, the coaches, they were saying, well, he's tiny and he's an Indian? Does that bother you?
Doesn't bother me. No. I had an amazing career. I've had an amazing life. I have an amazing purpose in my life now. And, to me, that's all that matters.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, to me, today is what matters. That's what matters.
We're going to talk a lot about that, because we got to take another break shortly, but we're going to talk a lot about today, what matters, and, talk about all of the things about forgiveness, what's important, being vulnerable. Your Twitter feed says you're a vulnerable realist, which I think is brilliant. But before we do, you talked about your great career in the NHL, and I'm going to ask Tommy in a second, but I'm going to ask you first, because you're still not in the Hall of Fame. What's up with that? Why are you not in the Hall of Fame, and does it bother you?
I really don't know at this point. I'm in the Human Being Hall of Fame, and I think that is way more important than the Hockey Hall of Fame. So,
yeah, that's for sure. I would agree with that. Tommy, should he be in the Hall of Fame, and will he be in the Hall of Fame? Does he still have a chance?
Well, full disclosure here, I don't think you know it, Al, and I don't think Theron knows. He certainly doesn't know it from me. I've made two official applications, candidacies with Theron for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Should he be in there? Yes. Will he end up in there? Yes. Is it the end of the world if he doesn't? No. I think Theron's got his priorities in order. Just a couple of quick points on there. We had a player named Joe Neuwendijk. He was a really good player for us. Theron has more points per game in the regular season and the playoffs than Joe Neuwendijk. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. So does Theron. Theron knows very well a player he played against named Glenn Anderson from the Edmonton Oilers. Looked on as one of the great, clutch players right there, and big goals in the playoffs and that.
Huge.
Six-time Stanley Cup champion.
Yep.
If you know it, Theron, you have more points per game than him in the regular season and in the playoffs. And these are the points that I'm making. It took Glenn Anderson a while to get into the Hall of Fame. Neither Glenn nor Theron were terribly popular with the fans in other cities. And sometimes that takes a little bit to...
Tommy, I think I have to correct you a little bit, because I was just coaching my son baseball, his baseball team, and I know you love coaching. I'm following in your footsteps, even though I'm a lawyer. I had to leave the game just now. That it was tied 5-5 in the bottom of the sixth inning. I had to leave to come on the air, and I said I'm interviewing Theron Fleury. There were three other coaches who are coaching with me. One, James Loney, who played for the Dodgers for many years, who's a coach with me.
Yep.
And they all said, man, I love Theron Fleury. I love Theron Fleury. So I think it's not only the Flame fans or the Ranger fans, but everyone loved him. We got to take a quick break. Theron, isn't it great news? You're going to be in the Hall. Tommy said it. It's going to happen.
It'll come.
It'll come. All right. We got to take a break. We're going to talk more to Tommy Thompson, Theron Fleury. After this, you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Do I play hockey?
Well, I play air hockey, ball hockey, bird hockey, bubble hockey, field hockey, floor hockey, ice hockey, kitchen hockey, room hockey, roller hockey, table hockey, twist hockey. And I play hockey,
hockey, hockey, hockey, hockey, hockey, hockey. Yeah, this is actually my son Hudson, who's 8 years old, and my daughter Harper, who's 7 years old, their favorite song. They've grown up here in L.A., and that is their favorite song. I must be doing something right as a Canadian here in L.A., and someone who has done something right his whole life, getting to where he is now, is Theo Fleury. He has won a gold medal at the Olympics for Canada. He has won a gold medal at the World Championships, the Juniors, and the Stanley Cup. We're talking to Theo, and of course, Assistant General Manager, former Assistant General Manager for the Minnesota Wild, Tommy Thompson, scout extraordinaire. Who has a lot of knowledge about Theo and has released to the public in the last segment that Theo will be in the Hall of Fame. You know, Theo, I was particularly interested in a comment that you made in your TED Talk. And by the way, everyone needs to listen to it if you need to get motivated. It's the TEDx Talk, Theo Fleury's TEDx Talk from 2018. You said, "When I drive the bus, it always crashes." For a motivational speaker, isn't that a little bit negative? Tell us what you meant.
Well, you know, for many years, you know, I was living in my trauma, right? And so, you know, I was basically running the show. And every time I ran the show, it was a very ugly, X-rated movie, right? And, you know, September 18th of 2005, that's the day I got sober. But the night before is when I actually surrendered and, you know, turned my will and my life over to the care of the universe as I understand it. And ever since that day, I moved over and I sit comfortably in the passenger seat and I do not care who drives the bus. Because I have faith, I have hope, and all those, you know, amazing things. You know, I have peace, I have joy, I have happiness, I have serenity. And, you know, for the first half of my life, you know, I didn't live that way. And so, you know, that was sort of, you know, the description that I use when I'm speaking, because ultimately, what are we in control of? Nothing, you know, and like I said, since I surrendered and put my trust in the universe has not let me down once since I made that statement.
What happened about 18 years ago when you had a gun in your mouth and wanted to kill yourself?
I was exhausted from living in emotional pain and suffering, you know. For the majority of my life, I tried everything on the planet to get rid of it. But I think the gun story is a significant part of my story because it's actually the day that I actually chose to live. And I chose to, I chose a path of healing. I chose a path of self-discovery. And, you know, really, you know, the determination that I had in the first half of my life, I've taken that determination and I've put it into, you know, into healing and therapy and all of these things. And it's been really, you know, like the last 15 years of my life have been, you know, quite incredible. The things that I've discovered about myself and you know, the reason why I did the things that I did and, you know, and all those stuff. But, you know, most of my life was driven by anger and rage. And, you know, when I left the game, you know, I no longer needed that peace because, you know, I'd hurt a lot of people. I disappointed a lot of people. you know, all these things. And it was that anger piece and that rage and resentment piece that really, you know, caused me more pain than it actually did good. And so unpacking all of my trauma history and understanding where the anger came from, you know, I just have a lot more peace and joy and happiness in my life than I've ever had.
Tommy, I want to ask you, just listening to Theo, you know, it's very motivational and uplifting. You've spent so many days around NHL players, young kids growing up through the league. Have you seen a lot of this, what Theo talks about? Is it common or is Theo unique? How does it all unfold in the NHL where there's a lot more pressure and stress than people know?
It's not unique, but it is unusual because I think Theron would be the first to admit that he had to have a far higher than average sense of competitiveness that can lead to rage to get to where he was as a player. You were saying, Alan, one of the smallest. He's the first guy 5'6" or below since World War II to play regularly in the National Hockey League, and he's a Hall of Fame candidate. So he's an inspiration to the smaller than average people too.
Does that include that includes both of us, Tommy?
Oh yeah, but and also the reason I brought up the Aboriginal point, a source of great pride to the Aboriginal community. He's had a positive effect on the lives of many people, and this is I guess what Theron's saying is he couldn't have done that without the inner peace himself. I think, Darren, that's the key. Hey, you had to have that yourself
in order to
try and influence others. That's but the sense of competitiveness that you had as a player, I think you'd acknowledge that, yes, you had hockey sense, yes, you had skills, you were a terrific skater, but you went above and beyond the competitive level of 97% of the players you played against. I mean, for sure. You match anyone in competitiveness.
Yeah, that's what set me apart from every other small guy that tried to play the game, because I was willing to die in order to win. And I knew that probably 80 to 90% of the guys that I was playing against weren't willing to do that. And because they weren't willing to do that, I could take them anywhere on the ice and do whatever I wanted to, because I knew they were never going to push back. And so, and part of experiencing trauma is, you know, we have this real sense of hyper sensitivities where we can walk into a room and within a millisecond know who all the good people are and who all the bad people are. In a millisecond. And so that was ingrained in me very early on in my life. And so, you know, going into junior and going into the NHL, you know, I knew who those guys were immediately. And you know, the other 10% who competed at the highest level, that's when it got fun for me, because now, you know, physically, you know, from a physiological standpoint, you know, I'm not supposed to be able to compete against a guy like Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky or Scott Stevens or Chris Chelios. I'm just, you know, physics tells us that that's not possible. But that's when I had to dig deeper and find more of that anger and more of that rage to be able to play, you know, at the highest level. And you know, whenever Team Canada came calling, you know, I was on every single Team Canada team, because the management knew that the bigger the game, the better I played, you know, and that was sort of who I was as a player. You know, I didn't like playing against the San Jose Sharks in February, you know, in a nothing game, you know. My time to shine was in the playoffs and those opportunities that I got to play many, many times with Team Canada. you know, those were the times that absolutely meant the most for me in my career.
But, and when you retired there, and you'd played more international games for Team Canada than any player in history, right?
Pretty close, I would say. I played for Canada 10 times, so in my career. Yeah. So
was it? You know, was it? We got to take another break, but just real quick, Theron. Was it hard to retire because there's all these stories of you, you know, trying to catch on here, catch on there, and was it Dougie Riseborough who was GM at Calgary when you left, or what was the deal there?
Well, Al Coates was the GM, and I was heading into my free agency year, and you know the Flames were in financial trouble because of the American dollar, and you know I sat down with Harley Hotchkiss, who was the owner of the Flames at that time, and you know he made me an offer, and I just said to Harley, you know, this is my one and only opportunity that I get in my career to have a chance to, you know, to make the big money, and so I ended up getting traded to Colorado and had a great run with the Avalanche, and then the following year I became a free agent, and you know, if I would have taken the Flames offer, I went to New York, and I actually made $11 million more than I would have made in Calgary. So
that was smart.
Yes. Very smart.
All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, though, we want to talk about a little different subject. We haven't really touched on sexual abuse. This show has featured Gloria Allred many times. She's on the show. In fact, I think she's on the show. Is it next week or the week after? No. 2 weeks, Gloria Allred will be on the show. Lisa Bloom, her daughter, also on the show. Corey Feldman announced his movie, My Truth, right here on Gervie's Law. It's been on the show a number of times. So we're no stranger to the very difficult issue of sexual abuse. And Theron will talk a little bit about that when we come back, as he suffered that as well in his career, along with all of the other obstacles. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Finally found a song that didn't say hockey in it. That's all right. It's cool. We're talking to Theron Fleury. We only have one more segment. Wish we had another hour here, but I will. It's his song? No way. Come on. Theron, you got to interrupt me, man. Let's listen.
In that quiet place, all the memories of that time.
This is good. You shouldn't have played hockey. Forget it. That's good stuff. I wasn't going to say another word, but it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Hey, how can people get that? TheoFleury.life?
No, it's on Apple iTunes and on Spotify. So
nice. Mm-hmm. That's great. Wow.
The album's called I Am Who I Am, and my band is called Theo Fleury and the Death Valley Rebels.
Jeez, I'm stunned. You know, because I was just thinking I was going to, you know, pump up that TED Talk again, how curiosity can cure you. People can listen to it and watch it. And I remember something, and tell me if I'm saying it right, because it stood out in my mind. I think you said when you see the drunk guy, always think that that guy is suffering. And
yeah,
that made a lot of sense to me. You know, you've suffered a lot, and you were quiet about sexual abuse from a coach. Tell us how you, when you think about it, when you see the drunk guy, always think he's suffering. You were an NHL player. How did we know you were suffering?
Well, I think you probably would have saw at the end of my career when I was in New York. You know, I think my last year in New York was, I was not in a good place. You know, my mental illness really showed up at that time. You know, I was severely depressed. I was having panic attacks almost on a daily basis. And, you know, this is, almost 20 years ago, and nobody was talking about mental health, especially in sports. And so, you know, everybody thinks that my addiction took me out of the game. Well, it wasn't. It was. I could no longer manage my mental state of health, which was obviously disguised as an addiction. And so, you know, I was completely out of control. I had, I had suicidal thoughts. I was not in a good place. And the last place that I should have been was in an NHL arena trying to play hockey, that's for sure.
Do you think that the sexual abuse you suffered earlier had any impact on your being?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. You know, I think, you know, my experience with my parents, first and foremost, which then set me up for, you know, the sexual abuse, and then suffering through the sexual abuse, and then, you know, masking it all with, you know, drugs and alcohol and food and sex and gambling and you name it. But it all finally came to a head, like I said, September 17th, 2005. And the next day, you know, I decided that I was going to make some changes and try to figure out, you know, all of this trauma that that I had. And you know, we just, you know, started working on little pieces, and you know, as I got more sobriety, you know, and more therapy, you know, I started to become a lot calmer, a lot more peaceful. And then, you know, and then writing the book in 2009 really, really changed my life for forever. And, you know, really put me in this place and position that I have now, where, you know, I have this really, really loud voice, and I'm an advocate and activist around trauma, mental health, and addiction, because trauma, mental health, and addiction all live in the same house. They're not separate. And yeah, and so I've basically dedicated the rest of my life to getting rid of stigma, first and foremost, and then secondly, trying to help as many people as I possibly can come to the grips with their own, you know, traumatic experiences.
You know, Corey Feldman, when he's been on the show, he always talks about his conversations with Corey Haim, and they talk about how difficult it was to face these demons, and how it was easier just to pretend it didn't happen. Gloria Allred talks about victims. She brings people on the show all the time, and they try to avoid the reality. How did you find it in yourself to be able to become vulnerable? Because you talk a lot about vulnerability, and when you've been through the experiences that you have, it's just tough for a guy like you to come out and be so open.
Yeah. Well, I knew I was going to die. So that's where it came down to, right? That ultimate choice and ultimate decision. I knew if I kept going down the road and the path that I was going on, you know, the story was going to end very tragically in some way, shape, or form. And so, and the one thing I hadn't tried was vulnerability, and that was to tell my story in the most honest, open way that I possibly could. And when I did that, not only did people rally around me, but I became this, like, this hero of people who all over this planet, and, you know, I said in my TED talk, I'm going to qualify everybody in the room right now as trauma survivors by saying, if you have parents, you've experienced trauma in your life. And I say that only because nobody is going to go through this whole entire life unscathed. It's just impossible to not have some sort of traumatic experience in your life. And that traumatic experience leaves you with emotional pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that that emotional pain and suffering is what I call mental illness, right? And so how do we deal with this emotional pain and scars that are left behind from these experiences? Well, we're going to gravitate towards the dark side of life. We're going to get involved in addictions as a coping mechanism to suppress the emotional pain and scars that are left behind from any traumatic experience. And so, you know, we all grew up in the suck it up era. And now, what are the results of the suck it up era? Well, we have the highest rates of mental illness and suicides in the history of our planet. So sucking it up for, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100 years, well, this is the sort of the trickle-down effect that this has had on society. And because there's no place for vulnerability, so there's no place to talk about your trauma. So this is what we're seeing, right?
Okay.
And now you add COVID-19 on top of it, which is the most traumatic thing that's happened since World War II. So now we've added another layer of trauma to our already traumatized society. And what are we seeing? The highest rates of suicides in the history of our planet.
So, you know, Theron, it's so compelling. We need another hour, but we're running out of time. We only have 2 minutes. Tommy, I want to bring you in here in a minute or less. Tell us what you reflect on when you hear Theron talking about his awakening, his changes, how you've seen it because you've seen it firsthand.
Well, I probably would be in the place of his parents. They'd be so proud of what he's doing right now because he's having a positive impact on people who have been through all sorts of traumas. And very, very astute words, Theron, that nobody goes through life unscathed. There's going to be people with traumas from all things, a number of aspects of their life there. And keep going, man. You're having a positive impact on way more people than you probably even realized.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up. Theron, tell us, you tweet at TheronFleury14, TheoFleury.life. I'm sorry, TheoFleury14, TheoFleury.life. Anywhere else people can find you in 10 seconds.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, everywhere. I have a YouTube channel as well. So, yeah. I'm everywhere. And
everywhere.
I'm always,
Tommy?
Always available.
Always available.
For anybody who's looking for help.
Thank you.